Capitol Report is a production of Senate Media Services.
The 2023 legislative session has begun. This week, the first black president of the Senate, Bobby Joe Champion, talks about his new role, and we meet a trailblazer with many firsts, Senator Zainab Mohammed. Stay tuned for this and more on this week's Capitol Report. Welcome to this week's program. I'm Shannon Lurkey. The new year is only just beginning, and yet state government is poised for action. Governor Tim Walz and other state constitutional officers began the year with a swearing-in ceremony at the historic Fitzgerald Theater. On Tuesday, just before the House and the Senate convened the 2023 legislative session, Governor Walz and First Lady Gwen Walz met activists and lawmakers with a homemade treat to welcome them to the new session. Melissa Hortman was reelected for a third term as Speaker of the House, and the full Senate, including more than one-third who are new members, was sworn in. Senator Bobby Joe Champion was elected President of the Senate, and the opening day session concluded with remarks by the new minority and majority leaders.
Over the last 164 years that this institution has been around, there's been some real characters that have come through here, people that have shaped the state. You know, think of Joe Rolette, who stole the bill that moved the Capitol down to St. Peter. And he hid out until the bill was vetoed, pocket veto, and the Capitol's still here today. Well, that guy actually came up from near my district in Pembina. There's also Knute Nelson. If you guys will look over, everybody will look over here. That's the ghostly figure over here that looks over our shoulders as we work each and every day, and the contributions that he made as an immigrant coming to this country and this state. Also, Wendell Anderson, who is more recent, maybe some of you even remember his work here and the Minnesota Miracle when he was governor, but he came from the Senate as well. This institution is made up of members, and those members change. The institution changes those members, and the members change the institution. Today we're turning over a new leaf, a new opportunity to come here and help Minnesotans.
All of us are here today, including our family members, because we worked hard to get here. And I want to congratulate each and every one of you. Today is a day to celebrate. We celebrate the new year, we celebrate a new session, and we celebrate our families and our staff and our communities. Let's put the campaign behind us. We're now here to govern. We were elected to serve our constituents. We are their voices. Let's use our voices to share their hopes and dreams. We might not always agree, but I believe that we are all passionate about helping our constituents achieve their hopes and dreams and helping the state. We all want to make Minnesota a better place to live. You know, we're going to have some good, lively debates. I have no doubt about that. But I hope we can do it in a way that is civil and shows genuine respect. Respect for each other, respect for the institution, and respect for our constituents. When we walk into this chamber, let's remember what a privilege it is to serve.
One of the results of the 2022 election is that the DFL now holds the majority in the Senate. The DFL caucus voted in November to select some key leaders and chose Senator Bobby Joe Champion to become the president of the Senate. He joins me now to talk about his new role. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Shannon. I always like being here with you.
What interested you about the role of Senate President, and what was your pitch to the caucus?
Well, you know, what really interests me about being Senate President is because I recognize the importance of being a conduit by which to make sure robust and appropriate discussions can happen on the floor around important public policy. And my hope is to always create an environment for that discussion to happen and for people to feel like that they are heard. And why is it important for the members to be heard? Because they represent Minnesotans. And when Minnesotans' voices are being heard, and we can consider that as a part of our argument, for lack of a better word, I think it works out. And so the pitch that I put forward to my caucus was, one, I have the skills and qualifications by which to do it. And not only that, electing me, they are also not only electing someone with the skills and qualifications and who understands the importance of this role, but I will be the first African-American or person of color to preside over a legislative body. And if we want folks to, you know, to continue to see the important work of Minnesotans and how we lead on these important issues, then why not here? And why not now? Not just for the communities I represent, but for the majority community as well. When we think in terms of you know, kids from the majority culture, seeing a person of color presiding over a legislative body, and they ask a question, or they can see someone like me in that place or space, I think it only adds to them recognizing that we too can lead, and we too should be respected for our intellectual capacity as well.
And you're previewing my next question just a little bit, because as you say, your elevation to this role is historic. You're the first person of color to become Senate president in the state of Minnesota. I noted yesterday at Governor Wahl's swearing-in ceremony that he spoke about how this legislature is more like the people of Minnesota than any legislature in the history of the state. And it's not just simply representation, it's also in leadership, because you are now a leader. What will be this impact on the state of Minnesota?
I think when you have the opportunity for a cross-section of people to come together and sit around a table and think about issues, you get a cross-section of worldview views and experiences. And that only improves whatever you are attempting to do. Right? And I think it's important to have not just someone from greater Minnesota or suburbia, but also from the metropolitan area. Women, veterans, lawyers, you know, doctors, you name it, teachers. I just think it's important to have those voices at the table. And I do think it improves things, right? It's because if I look at something, there's a well-known movie that I like, is called Vantage Point. And so it really encapsulates what I think. So if one is looking at an issue, based on where you're standing and your vantage point, you have a different perspective and you can give some another perspective. And I think that's what we should always do when it comes to public policy. So I think having a cross-section of folks and a very diverse legislative body only improves the lives of Minnesotans.
The president of the Senate is the parliamentarian of the body, overseeing the business of lawmaking and ensuring that the rules and procedures are followed. Have you been immersed in parliamentary procedure these last couple months?
I would say yes, right? And understanding that I don't know everything, right? Some things you only realize how these rules apply and how you can best implement them based on real-time experiences, right? But I also understand why we do it. So it's just like someone who is riding in the car, and the whole reason why you shouldn't go over the speed limit is because people think about safety and how you have the ability to react if you see things, right? And so when you think in terms of being on the legislative floor, there's a reason why you speak to the president as opposed to speaking directly to a member, in order to cut down on personalities or tension between individuals. And also, it's that strange thing that we have to do in the Senate where you can't turn around and talk to someone else, you have to talk to me. But I understand how we want to make sure that folks are heard, their arguments are considered, but not based on personality, and we don't want to do anything that would challenge or look down on someone's humanity, because we all have a voice and we all should be able to speak.
So everyone will go through you. In the press conference following your election as president, you spoke of balancing the rules and traditions of the Senate, which are very important to the Senate, but also the importance of having robust discussion on the Senate floor. Because you've been in the minority for much of your time in the Senate, does this hold a special place for you, this idea that the minority's voice should still be heard, that there should be dissent voiced on the floor?
Absolutely. You know, I think because I served in the minority, and I know what it feels like to also be a minority, so, and sometimes not feel like people listen to me or hear me or don't create space for me to talk about what I think, to me, that is something that is near and dear to my heart. How do we make sure that all voices are heard? Because at the end of the day, I don't just want one side being able to say what they think. I want the other side to be able to say what they think as well. And if we really have an open mind, and if we really are people-centered, then we'll listen to how that policy or position that someone is taking, how that benefits Minnesotans. And I keep lifting up the word Minnesotans. That's for real to me, right? It's because I know that we are 67 senators coming from all over the state. We all have different viewpoints sometimes. But I also look at disagreements as opportunities to agree, right? So I think we can find opportunities to agree if we're willing to engage each other, and we can learn something. I come from a Southern family, but I'm not necessarily an agricultural guy, right? So I think it would be great to understand, you know, what farmers are going through and some small farms and how corporate farming challenges them. And how can we make sure that we understand how food, you know, gets from the field onto the table? So I just think opportunities by which to create that space, and being in the minority should not mean your voice is less. It means that your voice is just as important as those who are in the majority.
Not only will you preside over the Senate, you will also chair the Senate Jobs and Economic Development Committee, a committee on which you've been the ranking member for many years. Why was it important to you to lead a committee and be the Senate president?
Well, leading a committee, it gives you an opportunity to make sure you can spend some money and make investments into various communities. And when you think in terms of jobs and economic development, the backbone to our society is small businesses. How do we make sure that we give them the capital that they need? But how do we make sure workers have the training and capacity that they need to be good, right? And there's a well-known phrase that says, the best social program is a job. And I think that we have to be very creative about how do we make sure people are able to make a livable wage, not just a minimum wage, but a livable wage. So to be able to do both gives me that honor, and I do consider it an honor to lead and be a chair and be the chair of jobs and economic growth, because I do believe that jobs and economic growth is important for us as individuals and families and communities and neighbors, but as a state as well. I want us to continue to be competitive. I want us to not only compete with Iowa, but I want us to compete globally. How do we do that in real time, and how do we do it in a real way, while also creating an opportunity for a young person to think and to dream?
Senate President Champion, I want to thank you so much for your time and congratulate you on your new role.
Thank you so much, and it's always so good to see you.
What might have been a routine floor session to establish organizing resolutions for the 2023 legislative session turned into a marathon session, touching on a variety of issues, including a fight over tradition versus flexibility when it comes to remote voting.
We need to be at work. This is not a job that is a hybrid job that we can remote in. People expect us to be here. They expect us to be working together. They expect us to be having conversations. That can't happen if we're not in this chamber.
As a woman and as a mother-to-be, I refuse to accept that in 2023, we still have systemic barriers that keep women like myself from doing the job that we need to do.
Does stubbing your toe count as a medical issue? Does Disney World for the family count as a family issue? We can go on everything between there and being on your deathbed and everything in that continuum and have the discussion. But Mr. President, that's not allowed in what's being put before us. What's being put before us simply is, in the judgment of one of the caucus leaders, whether or not that member should be able to vote absentee and not show up for work here in the seat of St. Paul.
We keep talking about the 164 years of this legislature, but for 164 years, there are a lot of firsts in this room. A lot of things have changed. There are more women and mothers, parents of young children. We have a pregnant person in this body. and we know how to participate and vote remotely. And so I really want to highlight that this is actually asking to continue to show up to work.
We did remote voting because of the pandemic. We're out of the pandemic now. We need to go back to the way things were. And again, situations arise, family emergencies. We were excused. I was one of those whose father was dying, and it took me away for 18 days. And that was when we were at a 34-33 one-seat majority. And yeah, we had to reschedule bills and change things around, but I was excused.
We can all act with the integrity to come in. A lot of people here are saying, well, it's going to be up to the leaders to decide. No, it is up to us to ask for that permission in the first place. And you know darn well, if you were asking for that permission to go to the golf course, that is not what your constituents want. So I do believe most of us have the integrity to be here when we can be here. I hope everyone has that integrity.
34 ayes and 31 nays, the resolution is adopted.
The makeup of the new Senate is historic. For the first time, women make up the majority in the DFL caucus, and also for the first time, Black women have been elected to the Senate. Senator Zainab Mohammed checks both of those boxes and more. She joins me now in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Shannon.
You are also the youngest woman ever elected at age 25 to the Senate. You are also the first Somali woman in the Senate and the first member of Generation Z to be elected to the entire legislature. Do you view yourself as a trailblazer?
I think so. I mean, a lot of people feel really connected to myself and my experience. And before I ran, I didn't think it was ever going to be as big as it had become. And I've had so many people across the world reach out about how the fact that I represent them, that they feel connected to me and I embody everything that they are. And so I think there's a level of trailblazing in the work that we're doing here.
As a member of Generation Z, just briefly, are there some big differences in how you view the world and elected office that may be different from older generations?
Absolutely. I think we're a lot more bold. I think we want to get things done quicker. I think we want to get things done in ways that are innovative and kind of with the times. And we're tired of things being done the same way that they always were.
Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dietzick mentioned you specifically when it came to the door knocking efforts of this last campaign season. And you won your election by a wide margin. What did you hear from constituents on the campaign trail?
That they want us to get work done. Everywhere we went in our district, and even across other parts of the state, people want us to show up, to do the work, to hear them. And we often met them at mosques and churches and picket lines. We didn't just door knock. We met them everywhere they were at, and we asked them, what is important to you? What do you need from a senator? What do you need from our state? And it was about take care of our families, do what's right, and please show up and do your job.
You describe on your campaign website some of the struggles that your family encountered as immigrants to Minnesota. I can only imagine how difficult it must be to leave your culture and your continent and try to start over in a new place. What is your perspective on the American dream? And is the idea that people can start over and make a new life someplace else, does that still ring true?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in Somalia with my family in the midst of the war. 97, and when we immigrated here, I didn't speak English. I was 9 years old, and so I was a fourth grader trying to learn how to speak English, and then at the same time trying to help my family navigate how to read paperwork on health insurance, on how to involve us in schools. I would take them to conferences. I was the translator about my grades. And so I think the American dream is that anybody can come here, can start over, and can make something of their lives, and I think I embody that in some ways.
Well, and you also wrote on your campaign website the challenge of trying to navigate, though, as not English speakers, state government. What could be done differently to help people?
Yeah. You know, when I thought about running last year, people often asked me, but why? And it was often about the political questions, the huge issues that we were facing. But for me, it was about navigating the systems that our government creates. It was so hard for my family to get health insurance. My mother has never had health insurance. I haven't had health insurance until I started working at the city of Minneapolis. It was about education system that is working for all of us. It was about creating a public safety system that is working for all of us. And often it is hard for American people to navigate those systems. Imagine being an immigrant having to fill out booklets of paperwork. It is hard to do that.
Much has been written already about the historic diversity of people elected in this cycle. At her swearing-in ceremony, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan spoke of the lived experience that will now be at the table. And we're already talking about it a little bit, but what are some other aspects of your lived experience that you are going to bring to the table?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Black woman. I think almost everybody knows that at this point. And often Black women face higher disparities in our healthcare system, in our education system. And we've never had a Black woman sitting in our chamber and talking about the issues that we do face, issues that my mother faces, and being like, this is what our experiences and our policies should reflect it. And we have an opportunity to be able to do that.
A recent headline in the Star Tribune business section read, quote, Minnesota heads into 2023 with low employment, workforce challenge, end quote. You are the vice chair now of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, which is chaired by President Bobby Joe Champion, which I'm certain will be tasked with addressing some of those challenges. What are your thoughts on how the state can tackle issues of economic growth, in particular because we are looking at a smaller workforce?
We are. I mean, we have a low unemployment rate, but we also have some parts in our state where people still need employment, and it's hard for them to find jobs that reflect the work that they want to do and their experiences. So creating more jobs is really important to me. $15 minimum wage across the state is really important to me. My mother still makes $13 an hour and has been started at $7 an hour when we immigrated here, and it's really important to me to be able to take care of those folks. And then there are other parts in our state, like the Iron Range, where we have unemployment, where we have people who don't have an employment. They need unemployment to reopen up, and we're going to be tackling some of those issues with Senator Hochschild as well.
You're not wasting any time. As a freshman senator, you've already issued a press release that you plan to lead the effort to pass a bill that would make driver's licenses available to all, regardless of immigration status. Now, some history on this is that it was legal until 2003, then it changed. And I know that Senator Bobby Joe Champion did carry this legislation a half dozen years ago. It passed the Senate, not the House. Right. Why is this important to you, and why are you leading this charge?
Number of reasons. I mean, I've heard about this issue in the campaign trail number of times. I'm an immigrant, so on a personal level, I relate to the issue. But also as a senator, I think it's important that we take care of our immigrant communities. It's not about driver's license. It's about restoring a right that people had. We had this right prior to 2003, and it is important to give it back to the people. It's an economic issue. Immigrants want to get involved in our economy, and we have an opportunity to be able to give that to them if we just pass driver's license for all. It's a public safety issue, and of course it's a labor issue, so I want to make sure that we get it done and we lead on this effort. We have an opportunity to get it done this year. You mentioned Senator Champion carried this, and him and I are going to be carrying it together this session as well, and I'm really excited to have his mentorship in getting it done.
Now, one of the critics of this bill, though, some of the critics, not just one, they're concerned, though, about the impact that people who are non-citizens with driver's licenses could have on elections, because, you know, there is a push to show ID, and if there were to show ID, and then you have ID, and yet you're not a citizen. How do you counter that particular criticism?
I mean, we had it in 2003. That wasn't a criticism before, right? And so we've never had this issue when we had this policy in place. It's not going to be anything different. We're just restoring what we already had.
Senator Zainab Mohammed, welcome to the Senate, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Leaders of the DFL-led majorities in the House and the Senate called a joint press conference to outline some of their shared priorities for the coming legislative session.
The bills you'll hear us talk about today are not all of our priorities. They are a representative sample of many of the priorities we'll be pursuing this session together. The Protect Reproductive Options Act, or PRO Act, is a top priority for the House and the Senate, and it will be House File Number 1 and Senate File Number 1. Minnesotans have been loud and clear that they want legal protection for their reproductive freedom and their bodily autonomy. We will ensure that Minnesotans are legally entitled to make their own decisions about their health care. One of the ways we can get more workers back into the workforce is to make sure that everyone has paid family and medical leave. We're very proud to have led, almost always number one in the country in voter participation, but we are going to work to even strengthen that record by making it easier for 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register. We are also looking at automatic voter registration and restoring the vote for those who have paid their debt to society.
After hearing from parents and school districts across the state, we'll also move to help schools and students by funding special education and related services so that kids on individual education plans can thrive. That will help the kids, the schools, and the local communities. We also know that virtually every community across the state is having a shortage of affordable childcare and housing, and that impacts the well-being of children and families. It stops parents from pursuing jobs, and it prevents small businesses from attracting workers. We'll work to make both of those more affordable for families, and that will help families, businesses, and those local communities. And since we heard about the impact of rising prices on family budgets, we'll push to lower costs and help Minnesotans afford their lives by moving to put protections in place to prevent the type of price gouging that we saw during the pandemic and in natural disasters.
One of the shared priorities that we are going to be moving forward in the House and the Senate is 100% clean energy by 2040. That was a bill that's passed the House and that Governor Walz has been a big, strong supporter of as well. Child care is one of those top things that we can address to try to make sure that we're getting people back to work and helping our employers find new employees. We also in Minnesota have some of the most expensive child care in the country. When you're looking at pre-K, it actually is the most expensive in the country. And that means that a lot of families aren't able to afford it. It is the same, and I know as a young parent of young kids, the same to put a kid into childcare as it is to put a kid into the University of Minnesota for full-time tuition in the state of Minnesota. And we're asking families to do that when they have a lot less earning in their careers at that point. So we are going to include in our shared priorities the Great Start Child Care Tax Credit, which is a $3,000 tax credit for families with children 5 years old or younger, $3,000 per child with a cap of $7,500. So that will make a real impact in people's pocketbooks and their ability to get to work.
Again next week as we delve into more topics affecting Minnesotans. I'm Shannon Lurkey, and on behalf of all of us at Senate Media Services, thanks for watching.